is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. As always, I am Chris Manning, your host from ForTheSorta.com and the Step Back. Today, it's October 11th. The Cleveland Cavaliers last night played a preseason game against the Chicago Bulls. Didn't go well. The Cavs lost 108-94. LeBron James did make his debut. Talked after the game about how he didn't really feel quite right yet, and you're still seeing some adjustments there. It's preseason, so we're not going to get full into it after just kind of watching it, but if you just want to know one thing about that game, it is clear that it's going to take some time and some adjustments for this group to fully come together. You're going to see things change. I think you'll see a better team on Friday against the Magic when they play next in their final preseason game. You will see a different team next Tuesday against the Celtics, and so on and so forth. They're going to have to kind of get some time together. Practice can only give you so much. And I think you saw that. Kevin Love, by the way, in case you're worried about his knee, seems like he's fine. And speaking of Kevin Love, today's show is all about the Cavs' new starting center, William Bull, who you've heard on the show several times in the past and who's a writer for A Wolf Among Wolves, is today's guest. We talk about Kevin Love at center, what he needs to do to have a successful year, what his future looks like. Everything you want to know about Kevin Love as we get into this season, you will hear it. Again, Cavs played the Bulls in preseason action, lost 108-294, and LeBron made his debut, and their new starting lineup was on display. I think Derrick Rose looked good. I think a lot of guys did look good. Love didn't look so good, but he's a very interesting figure on this team. Always has been. I think year four is kind of an interesting new evolution for him. Get all into that with William Bull on today's episode of Locked On Cavaliers. As always, please subscribe wherever you get podcasts. If you're so inclined, please give us a 5-star rating and review. It really, really helps people to find the podcast, and it's the best way to support the show if you're a fan of it. And if you do have constructive feedback, I really do appreciate it. Just shoot me an email, leave a review, even if it's not 5 stars, we do appreciate it. And I just want to get your feedback because this show is for you, the Locked On Cavs listener and the avid Cavs fan who is tuning in almost every day for the show. So today's show, William Bull, A Wolf Among Wolves, all about Kevin Love. We'll be back tomorrow with another show, and we'll talk to you then.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Bill, of course, we have you on to talk about Kevin Love, that mystifying power forward who has had a very crazy time with the Cavs, I think, is a kind of a good way to put it. Before we get into what he could be this year, we look back 3 years ago now, I mean, which seems like forever ago, really, 2014-15 season, he's 26. Did you think he would almost still be in Cleveland now and coming into his fourth year and being in a situation where he's kind of one of the bedrocks of a Cavs team that really underwent a lot of change this summer?
Well, first of all, he's a cent now. Please get that updated. Secondly...
noted center and rim protector and just traditional big man Kevin Love.
That's the guy. That's who we're talking about. I never would have thought in a million years I could have... there would have been long odds that Kevin Love would outlast Kyrie Irving in Cleveland. Like, it's really stunning. Just the fact that he's still there. But now he is, like you said, a kind of a bedrock of the team and an important cog and somebody I think they're going to lean heavily on this year. It's crazy to look back at it because it just feels like a lifetime ago already. I mean, David Blatt and everything that entailed and making the change to Ty Lue and winning the title and
the even subtweets.
Subtweets and fitting out. And I mean, just hard to believe that he's still there, but and it'll be, I'm sure we'll get into this. It'll be interesting to see if they actually do make him more of a focal point, because we've heard that before, you know, more elbow touches, more of him, run offense through him. We've heard it before, but it'll be interesting to see, because I think this roster is more set up for that kind of thing. And he's got some wing cutters that he's never had this many of them before in Cleveland. So I think it'll be very interesting to see what they do and how they use them.
Yeah, we're going to get into this a little bit. For context, listeners, we are recording this right after the Cavs with the Bulls. Because it's preseason, we're just not going to do a full recap of that game because just it's preseason basketball. It doesn't hold a lot of value. But the one takeaway like I had from watching what the Cavs have is that I think Love has to play a really big role, and that he has to be something a little bit different and just kind of be, especially while Isaiah Thomas is out, I think be someone that really carries the team. And I have specific ways I think make sense to use him. He did have, he did leave with a knee injury that didn't seem too serious, but that is worth noting that he did. And that's a concern, I think, with him. Is he going to break down at all? I'll just say this, and I remember when we first talked back when you were my colleague at For the Sword, and we potted about this last year, and just had talked about this in our email threads. He was someone when he was in Minnesota that I think if you just look back, he was kind of surly. He was kind of standoffish with the media, and I think understandably, like, I know there's that one Woj story that was the reason he felt burned. One of the things I think this year that seemed very different, and this is a carryover from last year from being around the team a little bit more, he was like kind of jokey at media day. This wasn't a guy who seemed really bogged down by where he was at. He just seemed kind of happy to be around, happy to be in a situation that he's in. And that was really interesting, just seeing that Kevin Love, who we just haven't seen. And I think like just having him sort of joke about the trade rumors and kind of not seem angry about it, kind of give some fun answers about LeBron picking the banana boat guys in the All-Star game. Like, it was just a fun Kevin Love. And like, it just seems like that, just in terms of him as a person, maybe it's taken longer. Like, you could certainly argue that it was complicated to get to this point. But I think as a person, Kevin Love seems more settled day by day and year by year now than we've really ever seen him since he got traded from the Wolves, and really ever since the whole David Kahn stuff went down with his contract.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to overanalyze this stuff because I never really know, because I'm not really inside his head or inside his circle or anything like that, and I never really was when he was here. Because like you say, he was pretty standoffish. But before I started covering the team, I mean, he was a lot more friendly with everybody his first couple years in the league, even though things were pretty miserable with Kurt Rambis as the head coach. I mean, he was doing every single, like, he would do Scott Van Pelt's radio show, for instance. Like, he would go out of his way to do the show and, you know, was really off the cuff with him and really approachable with him. Miles Brown, former colleague of mine at Wolf Among Wolves, I mean, he got pretty tight with Kevin Love, and this predates me, but he was pretty tight with Kevin Love to the point where he would just walk up back in town and like say what's up, and like he didn't have that relationship with anybody else, you know, that I could see around the team. So I was like, man, what's this? And then, but you know, it kind of makes sense. You're in the league the first few years, it's fun. And then maybe the losing starts to wear on you. The contract situation starts to wear on you. You know, and he sort of did get surly for a while. Maybe now he's just finally comfortable in his own skin. And it certainly seems that way, like everything you just pointed out. Because I think that's the kind of guy he is. But he also, at the same time, he just doesn't suffer fools. So he's not going to be like that all the time. When he's in the right mood and when he wants to be, you know, he's settled in, he's comfortable in his skin. He's still there, man. No one would thought he, no one thought he'd be there. You know, no one. You could have gotten, like I said, really long odds that he wouldn't be the year four with the Cavaliers, but here he is. So.
Yeah, I mean, and it's interesting too that they he was the guy they really wanted to deal this summer. I think the Kyrie trade request, demand, whatever what language you want to use, I think that sort of kind of tiptoed things a little bit, and I think he's someone that it's totally plausible. I don't know how likely it is because we're so far away from next summer. It's totally possible out of the assembled big three that came together in 2014-15, that he could be the guy that's the last man standing. which is crazy. Like, it's not out of the question that you get to next year and next summer and it becomes the Kevin Love, Isaiah Thomas, Buddy Cop show for 2 years or something. Like, that's not out of the question. And that's kind of – I wouldn't have said that was really possible 6 months ago. I certainly would have said it after year one. You know, and it'll be interesting to see how he would adapt in that possible situation. But I mean, when they get into that now, obviously that's all hypothetical. But it's just crazy that that's on the table in a way that I wouldn't have guessed a year ago or anything like that. Because I think I don't know how the Cavs exactly would approach post LeBron, but they could certainly say, okay, Kevin Love, your trade value is not super high. Your deal is coming to an end. We'll just keep you and give Isaiah a short big money deal and see what happens. But this year with the Cavs, you fit in this a little bit. We've seen hints of it in the preseason. It's a different Cavs team. He's now, I would say without Isaiah, the second. I think he already kind of maybe was the second best player on the team, even with Kyrie, even if Kyrie was the second most important. I think those are kind of two different things. I think he's poised to take a bigger role. I think you've seen versions of this. You didn't see it a lot in the Bulls game. Maybe some of that's just figuring stuff out, but I think, you know, in earlier games you saw him run some really kind of nice elbow action. You can go find a clip in my Twitter account where it was him and J.R. Smith. It was the opposite elbow from what he normally, I think, used in Minnesota. He was on the short side if you're watching on TV, he was on the short side elbow instead of the opposite side elbow on the okay. One end of the court. They ran a play where, you know, the first action fails. There's 13 seconds left in the shot clock. He gets the ball, and after a pass from Derrick Rose, which is another just crazy aspect of this, bizarre.
And, right.
And you see him and J.R. Smith. J.R.'s in the short corner. He just does a little quick pass to J.R., kind of goes to set a screen. They just read the play. He pops out to get a three out of that elbow action. Later in that same game, you see on the other end of the floor, they're running dribble handoffs with Derrick Rose zipping around and getting the ball from him to dribble handoff. They've done some of that with Wade, too. I really like that Kevin Love. It's something we haven't seen. I don't know how much you can fully go back to it. The game has changed in the 4 years that he hasn't really done that. But what do you think of Kevin Love, this Kevin Love, going back to some of what he did in Minnesota? And it's worth remembering, LeBron, everything you read about him, whether it's the McMenamin book, whether it's the upcoming Jason Lloyd book, LeBron was enamored with Kevin Love. Like, he targeted Kevin Love as his teammate to come to Cleveland. Like, that was one of the first calls he made. If you read Lloyd's book in 2 weeks, if you read the McMenamin book, you know that, and the Windhorse book, to properly give author credit, LeBron had interest in Kevin Love. And I mean, we never have seen the exact Kevin Love, so you wonder what LeBron actually felt, but this seems like the only time you're going to get that Kevin Love again.
Well, if you're LeBron, you're right. I mean, just to kind of speak to that specifically, if you're LeBron, I mean, you've got a guy who is a willing, good passer out of the elbow, who can pick and pop and pick and roll and post up. So, I mean, there's just a million things you can do. So if you're LeBron, you can run dribble handoffs with the guy. And for some reason, the last few years that we haven't seen that as much. But I think you're right. I hope they do it. Because that's the Kevin Love that got me so excited, you know, his last season in Minnesota. I mean, just watching the guy play, you know, he just had such command on that end of the floor. Everything he did seemed to work, whether it was standing at the elbow and making a perfect pass to a cutter, or if it was picking and popping with Ricky Rubio. There was a million little things they could do. They had he and Kevin Martin had these quirky little plays where Love would just kind of walk into Martin's man and Martin would shoot a three. I mean, just to like clear out space for guys. I mean, there was lots of really creative things that Rick Adelman was doing with him that that I think the Cavs can really do some damage with and really rely on, even if LeBron's off the floor, just because, you know, since the trade, since the Kyrie trade, now with Crowder, and then having Dwayne Wade there, I mean, if Wade is willing to do it, you put those two together and you just let those two play smart and play off of each other and cutting from like the weak side and let Love find people. I mean, that was the play that the Wolves ran over and over and over again, it seemed like, was just Love standing at the elbow with the ball and figuring out how to break apart the defense. And it worked. And it carried the team through stretches when they absolutely needed offense, because they weren't getting anything from the bench that year, and Love was carrying them to everything. To have that as a bench unit would be pretty effective, especially if it's against other second unit players. I mean, I think the sky's the limit. It's just going to be really interesting to see how they mix and match all these parts, because there's so many wings that have different little skill sets, and the point guards are going to be a work in progress as far as how they fit together. And if he's playing center, he got lots of things to work out on the other end of the floor. But on offense, I mean, the guy's got a way bigger toolbox than what he's been able to show so far in his time in Cleveland. That's for sure.
Yeah, I think that's indisputable. I think the defensive stuff is particularly interesting, just because, I mean, you saw just in the Bulls game that he was getting posted by Robin Lopez, he's not someone who is. I think he's a smart defender. I think he can be more aware than he's shown. You know, I think when he puts in effort, he can be passable against a lot of guys, but he's going to struggle to kind of be on a swivel and to be mobile enough inside in a way in defense that I think is going to be really interesting to watch. And it's not like the Cavs are loaded with lockdown defenders in their starting lineup. I mean, Dwayne Wade is an upgrade over J.R. Smith in certain aspects of it. It's not going to be in defense. J.R.'s a better defender. J.R.'s just straight up a better defender. Derrick Rose, bad defender at this point in his career. Just doesn't really bring it on that end. LeBron can be a good defender, can be a very especially helpful off-ball defender, but is he going to put an effort in that all night? And that leaves you Jay Crowder as your one good defender in the starting lineup. That's a lot of pressure on Love to be good inside and rebound in a way on the defensive end that I think is sort of interesting. But, I mean, I don't know exactly, you know, how much they'll get him in there with Thompson. Can you go back to that a version of last year's starting lineup at some point? And that's interesting too. And I think just watching, and I know you didn't watch it, but I don't think this would surprise you. It was very clear to me, but watching that lineup, because the Cavs, I mean, losing, again, switching from Wade to JR has its benefits. One of the things you do lose, especially when you have Derrick Rose as your point guard, is that you are losing spacing. You are not going to have just as much room for LeBron to do LeBron things with that lineup, and that puts a lot of pressure on Love to make shots and create and to space the floor for LeBron. It's a lot of pressure on Love and a lot of pressure on Crowder, but it's more on Love than anybody, and I kind of think they have to get him in a rhythm. He didn't play well in this game, missed a lot of very easy shots, just kind of seemed a little bit off. It's the preseason. He goes through these stretches just like every player, but I think there's just a lot of pressure on him to be that guy in a way the Cavs haven't necessarily needed to be, because Kyrie was doing so much of that, and they were playing, you know, three really good three-point shooters in their starting lineup last year, where now there's one, and it's Kevin Love. And percentage-wise, it's not even like he's an elite three-point shooter. He's good, but he's not, you know, dead-eye like Ryan, necessarily like a Korver or someone like that.
Right, yeah. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. So do you need him for spacing, since you have so little other spacing on the floor? I mean, and then this is a whole other set of questions, but I mean, it would make, like you said, it would make some sense to keep JR in the starting lineup and have Wade come off the bench, but I think we all know that's not really an option. I think that's part of, you know, Wade's what he brings to the table is he needs to be a starter. So I think they'll have to figure it out. The good news is, I mean, Love had years and years of experience playing with no outside shooting in Minnesota, and they made that offense work with, you know, Corey Brewer, who can't shoot threes at all, as the starting, you know, starting shooting guard. So I think it can work. It's just going to be a little bit tricky to get used to, and it requires everybody else to be pretty smart with how they move inside the three-point line and how they cut and how they back screen to get people freed up and running to the rim so Love can actually find them. But I think, man, I think what they're going to have to do is do lots of early subs, right? I mean, Tristan's going to have to come in pretty quickly for somebody, and then they'll have to do some mixing and matching with the second unit and then kind of collect everybody at the end of games to go back to whatever lineup worked the best, right? I mean, it's going to have to be some kind of mix and match, and especially when Isaiah comes back, they're really going to have a lot of options where if the other team is playing small, you throw JR and Dwayne in there and you just go with LeBron at the four and play a really small lineup, or I don't know. There's just so many pieces because you still have Iman Shumpert to think about. You still have Kyle Korver to think about. Like, where are all these wings going to get minutes?
It's a good question. Like, and they're going to play Jeff Green, who is murdering people on in dunks in preseason. But I mean, if we're being bluntly honest about Jeff Green, he's a replacement level player that's going to do some things a little bit better when he's playing with LeBron because LeBron helps shoot. But he's not. Jeff Green's not good.
He's not right. Good. He's gonna drive you nuts. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But Cavs fans loved Derek Williams last year, so you know, like, you know, it's gonna be what it is. The other thing about this that I think is just interesting with him as an offensive hub, kind of reignited in some way, is that I do think him at center makes some sense. So I just kind of just thinking about what you know about Kevin Love and what he can do there. I think there is some value to it. I think it fits in a lot of ways. I think defensively it's going to be an ongoing question. You know, like if you're playing the Nuggets or the Wolves or any of these teams with really good young centers, I mean, like, can you just, like, live with it? If they're playing the Sixers, like, are you really going to start him against Embiid? You know, like, these are just really problematic matchups for Kevin Love. I think offensively it's a really, really good idea. I think they're really good there, but defensively and just overall, what are you thumbs up or thumbs down on him as the Cavs is, as you pointed out when I called him a forward, their starting center, at least as they start the season?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he is better than he gets credit for, but not as good, not good enough to do, I think, what they might ask him to do, which is play center for, you know, 28 minutes a game. I don't think that's a particularly wise strategy if you want to get yourself ready to play playoff basketball. And I think maybe what they'll do is they'll play more wide open in the regular season and then clamp it down as the postseason comes.
They're certainly playing faster right now. I think one of the little changes you've seen tactically is Kevin Love and whoever, he's constantly looking to go outlet paths off of rebounds.
Oh my God, that's so beautiful.
So it's not, you know, it's not always, you know, a full outlet pass. When he gets a rebound, he's not just waiting and having, like, I know you watch the Cavs enough to know this. You'd have LeBron or Kyrie come back to the back of the baseline in the other end of the floor after a rebound almost, and they would basically take up to almost the full 8 seconds to get across half court, you know, and just take their time and then run a kind of bludgeoning isolation play. What they're kind of doing with in the preseason so far is, A, they're letting their guards, if the guards, so let's say J.R. Smith or Derrick Rose or Amon Shumpert gets a rebound, and there's some pitfalls to this, but they're letting the guards push the ball up the floor. You're letting them kind of get the ball up the floor, and then you work things from there. You get into your sets, maybe even if you have to recenter. If Love is getting the rebound, you're seeing him immediately kind of get into that tucked elbows back position. He's starting to look up the floor, and he's hitting guys near half court, and they're pushing, pushing, pushing. They're letting Love do that in a way that they haven't really let him do before. They're being a little bit more aggressive in that sense, and I think that's a really good use of him as a center. And if you're going to let him be your big rebounder, which I think he can do, even if he's not like an elite level rebounder necessarily, I think that's a really good use of him in that spot. I think I think all the questions for me on him on defense are, the questions for him as a center really are defense, and it's really are how much are they going to let him do other stuff besides space the four.
Right. Just real quick on him pushing the ball and being the rebounder and getting the ball off the court. The other thing that he can do in that situation, he was really good at this in Minnesota, was he would push the ball, hang back. if the initial break didn't work and the guard had to kind of pull it back out, he was so good at filling whatever space he could, especially if his defender wasn't aware. I mean, he would fill the space he could around the three-point line and just step into a three. I mean, he did that all the time. And it, you know, it was really just simple play to get him a good look from three too. I mean, that's another part of that he brings to the table. But again, yeah, I mean, it all does come back to the defense. Is he going to get pick and rolled to death? Is if you've got Derrick Rose and Kevin Love on the court, I think it's pretty. If I'm the opposing coach, I'm running pick and rolls at those two all the whole time they're together on the court. You know, if Love is the five, especially if Love is the five. I mean, it's just going to require a lot more collapsing and helping from the wings. And you know, the good news is I mean, they do have some athletic wings, and they've got a lot of them they can throw out there. To be very sharp by everybody else. Your margin defensively, your margin for error and what you ask your wings to do, especially Jay Crowder, he's going to be so important for them. He has to stay healthy. The margin for error just goes way down. You know, it's going to be just really interesting to see. And like you said, wide open, more push the pace in the regular season. And then you clamp down on the minutes. You tighten up the rotations. Tristan probably plays a whole heck of a lot more once it comes to the playoff time. But I think he can get by in the regular season. I think he can get by in that joke of a conference that the Cavs play in.
It's the JV league. It's truly just looking at their division. I mean, I know the Bulls, you know, beat them in preseason, but their division includes the Pacers, the Bulls, who are just both going to be abysmal. You have the Pistons, who just were a mess last year, and I think could certainly be a mess again this year. The Bucks are, I mean, certainly going to be pesky, but I mean, you have the Celtics aren't exactly a bad matchup for him. You know, I like maintain that Kevin Love has really kind of outplayed Al Horford the last couple of playoffs, and I don't think it's been close. Yeah. I think, you know, he can hang against the Wizards because they're kind of built in a more traditional way. And Markieff isn't someone that I think gives him a lot of trouble. Like, the East is fine for Kevin Love. I think like the teams that are interesting that give him problems are, you know, one, it's Embiid, it's Jokic, it's Porzingis, it's Kat, it's those type of young centers. I mean, when you play the Clippers, like, how do you hang against DeAndre? And you look ahead to who they're probably going to face in the finals, and just assuming we get the fourth matchup, and just assuming that's how that plays out. You look at the Warriors, we know the issues with. I mean, we certainly know the issues of him having to play the five in that series against their smaller lineups, but I feel good about Kevin Love. I think against at the five in a lot of ways against your JaVales, you know, your Jordan Bells. Like, I think you can hang in Zaza. I think like those are good hideable places for him, even if they're still cutting and moving. Like, I think those are more workable than when they go super small. But I think, and you're right, especially in the East, I think he's fine at center against most teams, especially because, like, if you're a team in this NBA right now with how much shooting we're having, with how much scores are going up, with how much teams are really getting up and down the floor, post-ups are not exactly what they used to be. You can go read countless there's a Zach Lowe piece, there's Scott Rafferty pieces about the post-up in the modern NBA. It's not a super valuable shot anymore. It's not quite as, you know, taboo as mid-ranges for some people, but it's not like teams are necessarily building their offense around post-ups anymore.
No, it's a thing to exploit when you have a mismatch. And there are going to be nights when Kevin Love defensively is going to be overmatched. But I think most NBA coaches, just speaking in a general way, would be totally comfortable with letting the other team post up that much. You know, like, yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Speaking of Rafferty, he had a really interesting post today, the Step Back, I think, about how Isaiah would really mesh well with Love, just because, and this speaks to how just different Isaiah is than Kyrie. I mean, he would do lots of different things off of, like, flare screens and running around on dribble handoffs and stuff. He was kind of used to that, and he was just showing plays where, you know, you can easily picture Love in the offensive you know, mold that Horford served last year, where Thomas was so successful. So that part's going to be interesting too, just how those two blend together and if that's a better fit to kind of fit the overall plan, if the plan is to have Love be a bigger part. I think Isaiah fits it better than Kyrie did in some ways.
I 100% agree with that. I think too he fits better than Rose because he can shoot and he's faster. Like, I think just what he does, I think just shooting wise, I think it just makes a heck of a difference, especially when you're playing Dwayne Wade, who's not a knockdown shooter. And Korver is going to be real interesting, I think, with Love. I think there are lineups you can build around Love and Wade. And we'll transition to this. I pitched this to you in when we were talking about recording this podcast, but I think one of the ways you make best use of Kevin Love this year is to look at what they have and to think, okay, he's someone that we can prop up LeBron with. When LeBron sits, he's the guy that we can use to prop this up. And I think the guy you pair him with is Dwayne Wade. It may be harder to do this until Isaiah comes back, and how the roster sorts itself out is going to be kind of interesting, because you don't know how deep they're really going to be a point guard, especially when you have a guy like Rose who could be brittle, right?
Right.
But I think when they're on paper at their best, have everyone healthy, everyone's humming along in January, February, March into the playoffs, when LeBron sits, as much of a defensive issue as it could be, and maybe this is where you have to play him and Thompson together to kind of take away some of the vulnerabilities. I think him and Wade and maybe Isaiah and just kind of like some version of those lineups are the best way to get minutes out of LeBron when he sits, especially if you're going to run something more dynamic. Because maybe you can't do everything you want to do with Kevin Love. I mean, they're going to give LeBron touches at the elbow. It was the first thing they did against the Bulls, was give LeBron a touch on the elbow. But if you can do it when he's sitting and do some of the more dynamic elbow play calling that works for Wade, that gets him moving, that gets Isaiah moving and zipping around, that to me can help solve a huge problem the Cavs have had, which is that they've created when LeBron goes. And I think that's just, I just can't think of really good reasons to not build something around Kevin Love in that way. Like I think Ty Lue's a good coach. I would have some questions if without Kyrie Irving and without, you know, with Kevin Love being your established guy and B, being the guy who has been around and is healthier than Isaiah and all these different things and can sort of set everybody else up, and you know he's done it at a high level before when he's with the Wolves. I have questions if you don't do that when you're fully healthy. I just have like, that to me would be super problematic if you don't do some version of that.
Right. No, I would totally agree. I mean, I think, and maybe it'll cut down on the minutes they play together. I think you have to have one of those two on the court at all times, LeBron or Love. Like, I think that should be like non-negotiable. Like, let Love prop it up. I would say that in the minutes with Wade, I would want, I would want someone who is at least a nominal defender on the wing, and then I would want Tristan also in the front court. Like, I think you would have to put those two on the court together. But then you let those two. I mean, this doesn't get. I don't know. This is more of an eye test thing. I mean, they're both really smart. You know, Wade and Love are both really smart players. And if that's your second unit, carry us while LeBron sits to keep us getting buckets, I think you're going to be in pretty good shape as long as it's done correctly. I mean, the other option for a second unit is to try to clamp down and play really good defense. I don't think the Cavs are particularly interested in doing that.
They're just not built for it either. Like, let's just they're just not right. They're just not built for it.
Built for it. So I think you're absolutely right to, and I think, yeah, Love and Wade together doing that would be the way to go. I'm curious when it gets down, and this is getting way ahead of things, of course, but I want to run this by you. I mean, I'm interested to see everything they can do just to get a really weird, crazy lineup in the finals or in the Eastern Conference playoffs, if it comes to it. I mean, playing with no point guard, you know, if Thomas isn't healthy or isn't playing effectively, or even if you just wanted to go bigger and you just do something weird, like, I don't know, Wade, Smith, LeBron, Crowder, and Love, or Thompson, you know, you weird with it, play a no point guard lineup, you let LeBron and Wade bring the ball off the floor, you do something interesting like that. I think having all these wings allows the Cavs to preemptively do something to make the Warriors adjust, whereas I always felt like the last three finals, it's been the other way around. Is that, does that make any sense?
No, I mean, I think you're right. I think you have to kind of do some of that, and I think, you know, the Warriors, I think, are just too good defensively. This isn't like they're astronomically, mind-bogglingly good on offense. They're going to wreck teams. Like, that's just – they have Curry and Kevin Durant. Like, that alone, aside from all the other guys that they have, like they're going to make Nick Young a useful NBA player. Like I'm just saying, like, they're going to do that, and he's going to, like, hit 42% from three or something, and we're just going to, like, scream, you know? Like, that's going to happen. I'm very sure that's going to happen, but I think you have to do it, and I think, like, if you can do that, you know, it's tricky because, like, they are so good individually defensively aside from having a good scheme. It's like if Draymond Green's guarding Kevin Love, is that, like, really the way you want to attack? You know, like, that. I think that's, like, an interesting question. And if Clay is chasing around Dwayne Wade and, you know, Iguodala's on somebody else, or just, like, kind of how it matches up, or, you know, like, how does that sort of work? And maybe you get away with it when, you know, Draymond sits or gets in foul trouble, or, you know, you put other guys out there that maybe Draymond has to guard, or just how do you do that? And maybe it's a starting lineup thing. Like maybe it works against some of the other things that are going to go on with this team, but maybe it's the starting lineup where you attack Zaza and you try to manipulate Zaza. And I do think it's worth noting, I think LeBron would be really, really devastating coming around screens and going full head of steam.
Yeah, no,
like, just imagine him getting a dribble handoff at the 6'8", 240, 250, whatever he actually weighs, just truck coming at you around a dribble handoff.
This is what I pictured, you know, 3 years ago when they first got together, was that, and then Love slipping for a three or whatever, you know, like, they could both do so much like that. I mean, and it would lighten the load, you know, just in a general sense for the regular season, it would lighten the load for LeBron. If you want to start playing him fewer minutes or in fewer games, just to save his body a little bit more as he gets older. Same thing for Wade. That's going to be an interesting thing to see what they do. That's a whole other conversation too to have is, I mean, are there just going to be lots of nights when they sit both of those two?
Well, that NBA resting policy is tricky because
I know,
but I think the Cavs are, like, one of the teams that are built to test that.
Yeah,
you know, like, I'm like, it's gonna be January, and they're gonna, like, just be like, whatever, and it's just gonna be like rumors that they're gonna get fined, or like Lou's gonna get asked about it and be like, Kevin Love's got a sore knee, you know, or like Wade's got a bum hip, just something like that, and like it's gonna just be like some conspiracy, just cue the conspiracy theory music.
Because isn't it LeBron? I mean, and this makes perfect sense to me. LeBron, didn't he say last year, like, I'd rather not play 28 minutes. I'd rather just get the whole night off and skip entire games and still play my 37, 38, right? I mean, because the other way around it is to just, oh, LeBron played. He played 15 minutes in the first half and then didn't play again.
Look,
you know, so
look, Bill, I am shocked. I'm just saying, I am shocked and appalled that the league and players would have different viewpoints on what rest is actually best. I'm shocked. I'm just shocked that employees and the employers have different views on this.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying it's going to be interesting to see how teams game this. Like, oh, LeBron played. He played 15 minutes in the first half. And now he's not coming back, and we're punting the second half.
So here's the thing about this is a tangent, but Lou has said they will not do that.
Interesting.
He said, he got kind of vague. I wasn't there, so I can't exactly say what the question was that prompted him to say this, but he said they will follow the rules, which, like, okay, you know. And he said that people can fact check me on this and make sure, but I am very, very sure. I am very, very sure that he said, like, they will not do that. Like, if people play, they're going to play.
Okay.
We'll see if that holds up, you know?
Right. And maybe it's not just a Cavs thing. I'm saying league-wide. Like, now that you've put a different structure in place for that, and I'm just going to be interested to see how it incentivizes teams to get around that rule? Like, are you going to see Kawhi? I mean, and, oh my gosh, imagine Pop with this, just to be petty. Like, he plays Kawhi for one possession and then sits him down for the rest of the night or something like that.
Yeah.
You know.
and they just had Becky Hammon awesomely coach half a game, you know, which is pretty great. Just like, yeah, actually Becky was coaching then. It wasn't me. You know, just like fully troll. That'd be incredible. Look, Love fits into this too, because Love is someone that could break down a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're going on year four of making the finals. That's a lot of basketball. Even with they've rested pretty smartly over the last three seasons, but they've also each had injury issues, you know, little nicks to watch and to be mindful of. And the goal is the only goal is to be healthy in late May for that series against Boston that's probably coming, and then in June for the finals against the Warriors. That's none of this other stuff matters. I mean, really. So they have to think in their self-interest. So I'll be very curious to see just what this looks like in lots of different ways.
And look, Love is someone that during games goes, you know, people say he goes back to the tunnel and there people get worried. It's really because he's going back on a bike.
Right. Yep.
He goes back and he gets on a bike and he keeps loose and he doesn't sit down a lot. He hasn't done that as much in the preseason, but he did that a lot last year, and he has these back issues. He has knee issues. It raises a question. That's going to be the last thing we'll hit about here is Kevin Love is, you know, really in the prime of his career. He's been in it for a couple of years, really. That's just functionally where we're at with him. He's someone that I don't know if he's going to be able to hang in the league when he's 36. Like that, I think that's like, it's fair to wonder that. What is the future for Kevin Love? Like, what in your mind, like, what does the next 4 years look like for him?
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked about this a little bit last time that we spoke. Just given his personality, I don't think he's going to be a guy that wants to hang in the league when he's 36. I think when he's done, he'll just be done. And it could be 33, 34. He's got other interests and he wants to do other things. But I think you're right.
Box is going to get him to retire.
Right. And I mean, I think the joke I made last time is that he would move to Colorado and twirl his mustaches. And,
yeah.
And yeah. Be happy and chill in the mountains somewhere, or live in Santa Monica, or do whatever. I mean, but as far as his prime, you know, and I'm not minimizing. I know he takes basketball very, very seriously now, and you're right, he is in the prime of his career. So what do the next 4 years look like? I mean, I think it's going to come down to what the Cavs want to do if and when LeBron leaves. If LeBron stays, I think the answer is pretty obvious. You keep trying to make this work because Love is, you know, you could say he's not an ideal fit, but I don't think you're going to do much better than him on the open market. You can't exactly, you don't have the cap space to go try to get anybody else.
The upgrades on Kevin Love were Paul George and Jimmy Butler. Those were like the guys those are the type of players I think you trade Kevin Love for, unless you're getting Anthony Davis or unless you're getting someone like that and you're not getting that. So unless you were getting Paul George or Jimmy Butler this summer, I think it just becomes – I just don't think like his value is that high. I mean, it was. I think certain teams would certainly do it. I thought the Nuggets made a lot of sense, but
yeah, no, I did too.
But
yeah, I mean,
I think like there's no other real deal for him now unless you're gonna just trade him for just something, even if it's 50 cents on the dollar. That was Andrew Wiggins and Anthony Bennett and all these other things.
Right. Yeah. I think it's going to because I think Kevin Love and Isaiah Thomas in the East could be 45 wins and a first round exit, or maybe if you get lucky, a second round exit. You know, Love and IT and four or five other pretty good role players.
Yeah, I mean, they'll have Crowder. They'll have you know, you'll have the young guys that are coming. You'll have Zizic. You'll have Chetty Osman. You'll have young guys, and then you'll have cap space if LeBron leaves. Like, you could just like throw money at stuff. And JR is under contract, and Chump's under contract. So you still have wings, and Korver's under contract. So,
right, and I think he's, I think he is a pretty good player. I think we're all evaluating him under the rubric of title or bust, which kind of casts a harsh light. And I think there are lots of teams that even if they say they wouldn't be ready for it. I think a lot of teams would be very happy to have him. So I think he will It all depends on what LeBron does. But I think he'll be a very good player for at least another 3 or 4 years, whether that's in Cleveland or not. I mean, it's really up to LeBron, but I think, and it's up to the Cavs front office what they do post LeBron, because if they decide to just blow it up, then they'll just blow it up. And then who knows what's going to happen. But he's, I think he's more than acquitted himself. I think played admirably in the last year. Seen before that when they won the title, that speaks for itself. So I think he's probably no matter what. So to kind of wrap that up, I think he'll be a good player for at least a few more years, and then he'll retire. We'll kind of be surprised that he did. That's how I think it ends for him.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. But last thing, we'll get out of here on this. What is a successful season for Kevin Love in 2017-18?
Like numerically, or
open-ended question. I just want you to give me the what in your mind is a successful season for him, and I will give you what makes sense for me.
Well, I would say healthy is the first, you know, the most important thing. I would say if there is no squabbling, because I'm curious to see how this goes with LeBron and Wade together, what that does for a team dynamic.
Look, Love sitting next to Wade on the bench. I'm going to read a lot into that. And they all like wine, so it should be fine.
Right. And it probably will be, but I mean, that's another thing to keep an eye on too.
Oh,
but like,
absolutely.
As long as if things are harmonious and Love is healthy, and the offense is playing at a good clip, you know, if they find a way to make it work, if he and Isaiah gel when Isaiah comes back, I think that's going to be a big indicator. You know, and if he keeps shooting the ball well, he's got, like you said earlier, he's a pretty good 3-point shooter. He's not a great one. If he can keep that up, because that first unit's going to need spacing. If he hits like 40% of his threes somehow, if he bumps it up to that, I mean, then that I'd say that's a pretty a single number that you could point to and say he did a lot of good for the Cavs this year. You know, he was the guy that really helped space the floor on the first unit with Rose and Wade, two guys that can't really shoot. So I would say health, firstly. Second thing is keeping the offense moving at a good clip. And thirdly, holding his own on the defensive end, not being embarrassed or overwhelmed, obviously, or anything like that on a nightly basis. Those are the three things. I mean, and some of the defensive stuff is going to come down to attitude and just the general state of the team, you know, how they approach the regular season. So,
yeah.
Of that's out of his.
But. Like, what does his effort look like in a Thursday night in Charlotte in January? You know, like, what does his effort look like when it's that? And it'll be interesting to see. This is what I think a successful Kevin Love season looks like. I think if you look at last year, I think that last year was his best year in Cleveland. It's only 60 games in the regular season, a little bit banged up, dealt with some stuff. I think he needs to stay healthy. I think that he just needs to be passable in defense, because I do think if he's just good enough on that end, he unlocks some really interesting things in offense. I think you're seeing the Cavs just like the Thunder, just like the Rockets, and all in slightly different ways. They're all deciding to try to beat the Warriors by playing something like the Warriors style. You're not seeing doubling down on the bludgeoning style that OKC used or the Cavs have tried to use. All these teams got a little bit quicker and more mobile, and Love has to kind of fit into that while still doing what he does. I don't think any player, whether it's Kevin Love, whether it's LeBron, whether it's Kay Felder, or just some random guy on the Wolves or in the G League, I think guys be successful by doing what they can do within the context of what needs to be done as a team. When you try to be something you're not, it just doesn't work out. And I think for Kevin Love, what he needs to do is he needs to hit the threes that he needs to. He needs to rebound. I think the three biggest things he has to do is he needs to stay healthy, he needs to hit threes, and he needs to rebound. And when he can and when he's asked to do it, he has to do the playmaking and stuff that I think they're going to need out of him to kind of make things a little bit different. I think he has to just hit these benchmarks. And I think Kevin, this should be an all-star year for Kevin Love. I think this without question, not just because the East is bad, but I think he could have a year if everything clicks right for him where he could be the best forward in the East in terms of more traditional front court players. I mean, yeah, I think you know, like, there's not that many of them, and like he's going to be competing against some, you know, guys that maybe are more popular. But I think on paper, he could be the best traditional overall four. He could have that kind of year this year if everything clicks right for him. And I think even just 80% of that would be a big success for him.
Well, if he, I'm glad you brought up the rebounding. I can't believe I forgot. I mean, if he
I just say this, I mean, interrupt you, but I think rebounding is really hard to talk about. Like, I think just like you can look at the numbers and it, you can look at the film, but I think like he just has to kind of make his presence known there. I mean, last year, 11.1 rebounds was his best overall rebounding number since he got to Cleveland. 12.5 last year, Minnesota career. I mean, he hasn't ever, his best was like by far when he was 22 in 2010-11. I think he was still bigger then too. And with, when he was playing with the better days, pre-GQ. Tristan Thompson, he has to rebound. Like, it's, there's no question about it that he, without Tristan Thompson as his mate, he has to rebound and probably offensive rebound a little bit better too.
And he can end possessions that way, and that will bring some value defensively if he is cleaning up the glass. And like you said earlier, starting fast breaks and stuff. But even if he isn't, if he's just focusing really hard on ending possessions by grabbing the rebound and boxing out, that can be a big help.
Yeah, I'm very excited to see what kind of Kevin Love we get. But Bill, thank you so much for coming on. Just give everyone a reminder real quick where they can find you online and where they can find your writing.
You can find me on Twitter at Break the Huddle, and you can find my writing at A Wolf Among Wolves. It's a Minnesota Timberwolves blog.
Yeah, go check that out. And Bill, I'm sure we'll have him back on again sometime soon to talk about that, to talk about Kevin Love and what's going on. Both these teams probably when the Cavs play the Wolves later this year. But this has been today's Locked on Cavaliers. If you're so inclined, please go on iTunes, give us a 5-star rating and review. It really does help other people find the podcast, and it's the best way to support the show. Constructive criticism is welcome as well. If you want to drop me an email or leave a review, that isn't 5 stars, that's cool. I'm all for constructive feedback. Be well, everybody. Have a great Wednesday, and we'll have something tomorrow. I'm not exactly sure what yet, because I just, you know, this was going to be Thursday, but wanted to break it into the recap. But this has been Locked on Cavaliers for Wednesday, October 11th, and we'll talk to you guys again tomorrow.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.